Welcome back for our weekly episode of the Electric Podcast. As usual, I'm Fred, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintrow. How are you doing, Seth?
Good, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing great. This week, we have a bit of a slower week for news, for electric vehicle news, I think, especially after last week and the earnings, and that always generate a lot of news for us. But this week, we still have a few interesting things that that came out. When it comes to Tesla, I think one interesting tidbits on information that actually one of our readers pointed out to us that actually came out from Elon Musk's CEO compensation package that we reported on a few weeks ago. And now the board submitted it to the shareholders to vote on. So I know you still have like one share set. What way are you voting for the CEO compensation package?
Yes, I have one share, and that is not because I want to make money on my reporting. So it is because I want to get all the shareholder information for news purposes.
But you still get a vote with that share. So it's one share, one vote.
Elon can have whatever he wants.
Yeah, he can have his multi-billion dollars package. Yeah. So and in the comments section of the few articles that we wrote about it, I think most people were pretty open to it, since it's completely 100% dependent on shareholder value added to the company. So it makes a lot of sense.
Elon doesn't make money unless shareholders make money.
But if shareholders makes money, he makes a lot of money. I mean, 1% per milestone, that's a lot of money. But his last CEO conventional plans that were first introduced in 2012 and it's now being retired was also very generous, and it was also based on milestones, but different milestones, more related to products and production goals and stuff like that. And one of those goals was the aggregate production of 300,000 Tesla vehicles. And with the new proxy statement for the new compensation plan, they disclosed that in between Tesla releasing their fourth quarter results, so December 31st, and the time that the proxy were submitted, which is September 7th, which is also the earnings for quarters being released, they achieved that goal. So it wasn't achieved before, and we calculated that Tesla delivered just over 286,000 cars at the end of last quarter. Excuse me.
Right, so, and that kind of goes into our Tesla hitting 300,000 vehicles this quarter.
Yeah, so at some point this quarter, Tesla delivered 300,000 vehicles. So we still have a good idea of how many. Indirectly give us an idea of how many vehicles Tesla delivered during the quarter. We didn't include the Roadster. I'm pretty sure the Roadster are included in that total number, so that'd be more than 286,000, would be closer to 289,000 vehicles. So Tesla probably already delivered in the first month, in the first month of the quarter, first like 6 weeks of the quarter, about 10,000 to 14,000 vehicles. And that includes the Model 3, of course. So Model 3 helped Tesla reach that new milestone. And I think it's an interesting milestone, because just if you look maybe just 3-4 years back, how many people thought that Tesla would be able to get there? I don't think many people.
Yeah, well, it's always like I still don't understand the naysayers, because, I mean, we're at like 9/10 of the way to the culmination of the master plan. And there's still people who are like, well, this, you know, Elon Musk is done, you know, in Tesla. It's not just Elon, obviously, but they've done 9/10 of what the master plan was. And, you know, clearly not as quickly as they had hoped. You know, they didn't hit every milestone on time, but they've been hitting milestones. And it's just funny to me, like, oh, well, you know, they said they couldn't build the Roadster, and the Roadster wouldn't be able to, you know, it'd be a flop, and what then they wouldn't be able to do the Model S, and the Model S would be a flop, and, you know, now it's Model S and X are like the number one luxury cars.
In their segments.
In their segments. And it's perplexing. Like, you don't think that he can make this like last, like what seems like there's still 400,000 people waiting. Like you don't think that they can figure out, you know, whatever bottlenecks and slowdowns are happening in the.
Yeah, the only thing where I give credit to, well, not really credit, but I think there's reason to have doubts when it comes to the naysayer's argument for Tesla, like repeating the magic formula for one vehicle to another, is the price.
Right.
So you're going to an example, the Model S that you bought back like 5 years ago was the 40 kilowatt hours Model S. So that Model S like gave reason to Elon Musk, like it was reaching his $50,000 gold for a price tag for the Model S, but they ended up discontinuing the car months into production.
Yeah, actually not even so they never made a 40 kilowatt hour Model S.
Yeah,
they made a 60 kilowatt hour one, and then they decided that they were going to sell it for 40 and software limit my access to the battery until I paid another, you know, so much money. But, yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting because, like, that car is actually cheaper than, or it's the same price as the Model 3 that they're selling today.
Yeah, so that was my point. So right now, Tesla still didn't officially achieve that $35,000 price tag for the Model 3, excuse me. And
it doesn't look like they will this year.
Yeah, that's the thing too. So we talked about that last week. But since we're talking about naysayers and their arguments, I think that's something that at least until Tesla does achieve that goal, and I think they will at some point, because that's the number one selling point of the Model 3. The Model S, even at $50,000, wasn't the point of the Model S, to have like a cheap vehicle, not even cheap, but just like reasonable price. It was to have just the best sedan, mid-luxury sedan possible, and they did that. There's no doubt. But
yeah, actually, we should also note that. So made a little mistake there. I said that it's the same price. It was actually $5,750, and then after the federal tax credit, it was $49,000, or you know, it's $5,700.
Yeah.
So it's not the exact same price, but it's pretty close.
Pretty close, yeah. And well, yeah, the current model, the cheapest you can buy the Model 3 right now is 49,000.
Yeah, 49,000. If you get the black base black model with just the $9,000 extra battery and the $5,000 you know glass roof and stuff.
But yeah, so until Tesla does achieve that price and the Model 3, that's the selling point. That's the price tag was the very important part of the plan, when it wasn't really the case for the Model S. But nonetheless, 300,000 aggregate production, I think, is impressive. It's something to celebrate for Tesla, I think. And that's why it's weird. They don't announce that stuff. Like, we had to, like, a reader had to point out the proxy, then I had to look at the proxy, and Tesla just doesn't. I gave the example of Nissan with the Leaf. They sent out a ton of press releases just a few months ago when they achieved that. So I think that's interesting, but a fun tidbit of information.
I'm sure they'll do something at 500,000, you know, whenever that happens, late this year, early next year, or whatever.
Yeah, and that's the interesting too. The rate at which they are increasing is important. So the next 200,000 vehicles is going to come a lot sooner, probably next year, if you believe the at Tesla's production goals.
Yeah, you know, that kind of takes us off a side note there. Bloomberg this week released a kind of a tool for estimating Tesla Model 3 production, and we had talked about it briefly on Slack, but it doesn't seem to be terribly accurate in terms of calculating. I mean, it's just based on VIN numbers, and there's a lot of questions about, you know, how does Tesla allocate its VIN numbers.
Yeah, I didn't like it because they said that it was two different methods, but at the end of the day, they were really reliant on the VIN numbers. And when the first, I think they changed that tool, they changed the way that they calculated like a day into releasing it or something like that. But when they first released it was like 7,300 vehicle produced or something like that. But I'm not sure that makes sense at the time, because they were basing that on the number of VNs released, well, the actual number that the VNs were produced. And at that point, yes, there were VNs in the 6,000 that were spotted, that or customers released them. But Tesla is also still producing today VNs in the 4,000s. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to try to figure that out. I think it's a good tool, like in mid-production. Like right now, if you look at the VINs of the Model S and X, it makes a lot of sense. Like you can keep tracking and reduce a few thousands depending on how they make the jump and everything. But very early in the production process right now, when Tesla, for example, registers new VINs with NACHTA, that makes sense, because that means if they register a huge batch, that means they are preparing to produce probably a bigger batch of Model 3. But other than that, I don't think it's you shouldn't put money on that, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I kind of got a feeling that when they changed it a few days in, they probably got something from Tesla PR saying,
that's not impossible. That's not impossible. Yeah, because they reduced the production rate. Like not only they were estimating the total production delivered, but they were trying to estimate to use that to extrapolate to the current production rate per week. And they were over 1,000 when they released the tool, and a day later they reduced that to under 1,000. So not sure what.
Yeah, I mean it's a guess at best.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. One thing that was interesting too this week, that we started to have a better understanding of the depth of the priority that the current Tesla owner are getting for the Model 3. We published an article with the headline, "You can get a Model 3 in weeks if you're a Tesla owner in the US." And that's pretty much what we learned this week. So Tesla always said that they were giving priority to Model S and X owners, Roadster owners too, actually. And but it wasn't exactly clear just how far that priority goes, because there's still, like, for example, the first day that Tesla took reservation for the Model 3, over 100,000 people reserved the car. So many people thought that the owners that were registering that day, they get priority over the non-owners. But then someone reserving this month, did he still get priority if they are owner versus the person that has been that placed $1,000 deposit 2 years ago and doesn't have a Model S and X or Roadster? And the answer to that is yes, they do get priority, because Tesla owners that are putting reservation right now are getting an invite to configure if they are in the US, because deliveries are still limited to the US, but they are getting an invitation in the very next batch of invitation that comes out. And another batch came out this week, and that's how we figured that out, because a few owners let us know that they were getting those invitations based on a reservation that was done only days or weeks ago at best. And I don't know if you look at the comments on that article, but the feedback was really mixed. Like, a lot of people do agree with the fact that the Model 3 wouldn't exist without Model S and X buyers, so Tesla makes sense for Tesla to give something to their early adopters of those vehicles. But I think it's people are taking it in a bad way too, if you've been waiting for 2 years and you also placed your $1,000 deposit.
Yeah, I mean, it basically comes down to if you are a Tesla owner or not a Tesla owner. And if you're not a Tesla owner, that sucks, because, some schmuck, some rich guy who's already got a Tesla walks up, picks up the phone and says, "Hey, I want a Model 3. And they get one in 3 weeks, and you're probably waiting another few months. I get it. Like, that's not cool.
But there's a silver lining, I think, in that the fact that we learned that information is that they're probably running out of Tesla owners to give Model 3 to sell Model 3s to, if you can
place it. I imagine a few are waiting for, because they already own a Tesla, so they have like a Model S or a Model X, and either they're, like, I'm just using my own example, but like they might be waiting for the 3500, or they might be waiting for the all-wheel drive one. So this is all the Tesla Model S and X owners who want this exact build, which is a long-range
Premium interior.
Premium interior, and you know, the six colors, and I don't even know if you can get the and the wheels. You can, you know, whatever. Yeah. So, you know, there's still a lot of Tesla owners that haven't configured their Model 3 yet. I would say maybe half or more. I don't know. So, I don't know.
And I think there's a lot of different kinds, like either groups of Tesla owners, like those that purchase the performance vehicle, for example. There's a core group that just keep purchasing the new top performance Model S. So those right. people just want the newest thing possible with all the option and everything. So those one, I'm not sure how Model 3 will play into that, if they just want Model 3 because it's another Tesla and they're just huge fans, or it's not a performance car enough. But in my case, I want the Model 3. I want an upgrade on my current Model S if I want a Model 3. So I don't want to downgrade for with buying a new car versus my used Model S. And that means a longer range. So if I get the standard battery pack, I lose range versus my Model S. So that's not great. So I want the long range battery pack. I get a little bit range bump here. I like the all-wheel drive too. My Model S is even though it's a performance, technically it's a performance Model S, it's just an all-wheel drive. It was back when Tesla was making a rear-wheel drive performance Model S. And I also get the autopilot. I didn't have autopilot in my car. So if I get a Model, even though it's like technically a less luxurious vehicle, it's actually less expensive too, I'm getting a significant upgrade if I exchange my Model S for a Model 3.
Yeah, I have to say, I made a trip from New York to Ohio and back last week. It's kind of the first time I've really used autopilot long term. Mm-hmm. And it really, like, obviously, you don't want to take your eyes off the road for too long. Mm-hmm. But on long trips, if you're by yourself, it's really nice to, like, when you want to reach down and find, like, some food or, you know, whatever you're looking for. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have that autopilot on, you know, like you reach down, you're looking around for something for a couple mm-hmm. seconds. It's not, your car is not going to veer off into the side of the road.
Yeah. You know, something typically. That you would do anyway without autopilot, but now you feel more confident a little bit doing it.
Yeah. It's a lot safer to do it with,
because you should still pay attention to the road, of course. But, yes. I just want autopilot for the job too.
Yeah, I know.
I love reporting on autopilot and the progress and everything. And, so any time that I can get into a Tesla's autopilot, which is pretty often really, I love testing it. But if I have one and I can just like put a lot of time in each new update and everything, that will be a lot of fun. And I can do that with my car right now. But I think that was an interesting update this week with that. But unless Tesla release the all-wheel drive soon enough or expand to Canada, which was supposed to be for both mid-2018, unless those are coming like really, really soon, I would assume that Tesla will open the configurator to non-Tesla owners very, very soon. So keep an eye out for that. And
and how long do you think we have until the $7,500 credit is gone and we're down to $3,750?
Yeah, so I talked to Tesla about that, but I wanted them to be more transparent about it. Because they said that they would do that like a few quarters back in the shareholder letter, that they'd be open about the production process of the Model 3 and the ramp up and everything, and they haven't been bad about it. Like they do update us every quarter or so, but I think buyers in the U.S. it's very important for them, because a lot of people are factoring that into the car purchasing process. And Tesla wasn't willing to give us any information to try to get a better estimate, so we're just working with our own estimate again. And my own estimate right now places reaching the threshold in Q2. So hopefully it's late in Q2, but I don't see Tesla eating it late in Q2 unless the skew with the numbers, the production, and they start shipping in Canada sooner, which is likely. Now that we we saw Tesla accelerating the expansion in Canada. So just a few weeks ago, it was supposed to be late 2018. Now it's mid 2018 if you get the all-wheel drive, which I think a lot of Canadians will get. So of course, we don't know the numbers, so that's a problem. That's why we reached out to Tesla, wanted to get a better idea of the numbers. So just how many Model 3 reservations are there in Canada? Can it make a difference? So can Tesla just focus deliveries in Canada for the for like the second half or the second quarter, and just hit that at the very very beginning of Q3 instead of hitting at Q2? So if they do that, then it's a perfect scenario. So if they manage to hold off until the whole Q2 by just fudging the numbers and not fudging numbers, but delivering in other markets instead of the US, then you have two full quarters. The entire 2018, there's no problem for the full tax credit, federal tax credit for the Model 3 or for any of Tesla vehicle actually, because it still applies to Model S and X. And then the phase out period just happened in 2019 once the standard battery pack is already there. So people with the standard battery pack could still get the federal tax credit, but there's a lot of big if in that estimates for people. So just take that with a grain of salt, please. Don't don't put money on it. You have to put money on it we were talking about
so
that.
I think going back to, you know, the non-Tesla owners are a little bit upset because, you know, theoretically they're buying a $35,000 car and they would be getting a $7,500 federal tax credit, but they just got pushed back to if they're getting the $35,000 base model, they got pushed back to 2019, and it's a lot less certain that the $7,500 is going to be available then, probably won't.
Yeah.
So they not only got pushed back, 6 months or whatever in getting their vehicle, but they also got knocked down theoretically the vehicle price just went up.
Well, like I said, there's still hopes. Like you could still get the standard battery pack and non-owner standard battery pack with a $700 credit. But you should maybe, like we were talking about that before we started the show, like if maybe you weren't looking to have like the long range battery pack, then maybe with the tax credit, it sort of end up like having a cheaper long range for the same because. If you still, that logic only apply if you're still getting the car without the federal tax credit, but you end up going with fewer option, like not the long range battery pack, for example, which is a $9,000 option. So instead, you want to use the difference and buy it sooner with the long range and use the tax credit. So that's maybe a strategy I can look into. But yeah, it complicates things for a lot of people. And what complicates it more is that we actually don't know when Tesla's going to hit that threshold with that $200,000.
So here's a conspiracy theory. What if Tesla holds back sales just so they hit 199,999 until the end of a quarter? And then once the quarter's over, then they unleash a torrent of vehicles because they'll hit 200,000 that quarter, and that'll push them over.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like,
A lot of cash from the federal government. That's $4,000 per car.
Yeah. Well, either way, I don't think they would hold the cars, the actual cars, because that's just too much inventory that's going to build up. But like I said, if they can expand like to Canada and just push put the deliveries in Canada instead of the US, just to be able to wait until the quarters end in order to do that, that makes sense. But at that point, technically, because if that happens, in my mind, the way I modeled it, it would happen like in Q2, so they will wait like half into Q2 to do that, and then it will in Q3 they will start delivering the US to hit the 200,000 mark. But if they do that, they will already be at technically at high production rate. Right now they think 5,000 a week. So if they have 5,000 a week and they still have Model S and X also in production, that's going to be they're going to go crazy for two quarters of the full 7,500 tax credit. And yes, it's going to be a lot of money. But I don't think that they're going to build up inventory for it. Maybe a little, right, but not like 100,000 cars or something.
Well, I mean, it would just be like, it's another quarter of selling every car $4,000 cheaper. Yeah. So it would be, it's a pretty big deal. Like, if I'm running the numbers at Tesla, I'm like, let's try to hold off on hitting 200,000 until the very last you know, the first day of some quarter. So like, for instance, the first day of quarter three, let's hit 200,000 right then, because then you have the whole rest of the quarter, then the extra, you know, quarters, because that's basically when your wind down starts. That's, to me, that's like something Tesla would do. Like,
yeah, it makes sense it's a loophole that you have to exploit. I mean, it's there,
right.
It's there for that, and like, they are the first that's gonna hit the threshold. So there's no model on how to do it perfectly. Like Nissan and GM are not far behind, but like right now Tesla's gonna try to do the best of it, and it's gonna give a good example for GM and Nissan to reproduce when they can. But that's where we are right now. What else? The Tesla crash, the Model 3 crash. We had a new crash this week of the Model 3 that was interesting for a few reasons. The main reason is like it was a good example of the feedback loop that Tesla is pretty good at. Because the crash itself, we don't have that much information about it. It was posted by an anonymous Model 3 owner on Reddit. He posted a bunch of pictures and a few comments about what happened, but looks like there was a significant crash, a front end collision at about 60 miles per hour in an intersection, and so there was the driver and a passenger, and the driver actually credited Tesla for like saving his life, or at least he says that the first responders, the paramedic and everybody said it was lucky to be alive from the severity of the crash.
I thought he said he just had some foot injury.
Yeah, so he walked away from the thing, but his foot was a little bit hurt, and his passenger got caught from the screen. So that's what was interesting. So from he gave some feedback in that Reddit post. I'm gonna read it verbatim. My only complaint about this car is that during the crash, my passenger arms hit the screen and shattered it, which prevented me from opening the glove box with title and insurance. So, as you may know, the only way to open the glove box on the Model 3 is through the screen. So, Model S, you have like a physical button next to the center screen, but for the Model 3 they decided to just go with the screen. And so after he posted that, Elon tweeted he took the feedback and he tweeted some possible fixes for those problems. He said that he's gonna add software that will open the glove box automatically if there's a crash, and once the vehicle comes to a stop after a crash. I'm not sure it's gonna already gonna do that, but shouldn't be too difficult with software. And he said that he's gonna look into bonding a thin plastic sheet to the front of the screen, the front or the back of the screen. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. I didn't quite understand like the display he's talking about.
That's my understanding. Like the passenger, she hit her hand on the display, and it shattered, and a piece of the glass cut her. But I thought that like most of those screens they don't shatter in big pieces like that.
Maybe like get some Gorilla Glass or something that the smartphones use.
Yeah, I don't see how that happens. And I thought that was already standard, but if it's not, apparently it's not. But at least what's impressive, like the short feedback loop, like there's a crash and the owner reports the crash on Reddit on a regular forum. And Elon just tweets about it and wants to implement solution right away. And Tesla's pretty good about that because of just the way they implement changes to the car right into the production line all the time. Like back when we don't know right now about the Model 3, though, there is changes we see with the service bulletins and stuff like that. But back in the days of the production ramp up for the Model S, like there were 20 changes a week or something like that, just seeing efficiencies improvement and safety improvement just from...
Yeah, I think within a year, they said that the Model S had lost like 200 pounds in weight of just like, you know, lighter materials, making, you know, closer cuts. And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
200 pounds is a human, you know, a fairly large human.
Yeah. Then there were also safety improvement, like when Tesla, for example, introduced the titanium battery pack cover.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so
that was after a couple of battery puncture things.
Yeah, yeah, just people driving on the highway and then driving over.
They hit like a cinder block.
Yeah, there was a cinder block. That was the example that Tesla used. Yeah. That, like to they made a GIF out of it, which was cool, like just with the titanium plate running over it and breaking it. But I think the straw that broke the camel's back was the guy that ran over like a stop sign, like the pole of a stop sign or any traffic sign that was on the highway, and it was just flipping the perfect angle that when he ran over it with this Model S, it punctured the entire battery pack and came out of on the other side in the passenger compartment. So that's not, and the car, I think the car caught on fire, or maybe not on fire, but like there was a problem with the battery pack, of course, but also a problem that it just completely went through, and it would have went through just a regular car too, like a conventional car, but and it's not like a regular thing that happens, running over that stuff on the highway. But Tesla fixed it pretty quick. And, well, they haven't fixed this for the Model 3, so it's just Elon Musk saying that he's aware of it and they're planning fixes. But still interesting nonetheless, I think. Moving on, SpaceX. Well, yeah, just last week we had a ton of SpaceX news because of the Falcon Heavy launch. Now, still some relation to Tesla and the SpaceX world this week that we found out. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but besides just the rocket launch service and plans to colonize Mars that SpaceX is working on, they're also working on a satellite constellation to offer a broadband internet service all around the world. And they've been working on that for a few years now. But this weekend, I think, yeah, the launch is this weekend, tomorrow, I think, they are launching the first two prototypes of those satellites for the constellation. So the constellation is going to be huge, like 12,000 satellites, something like that.
It was something like they're going to double the amount of satellites in space.
Yeah, yeah,
like easily. Something crazy. That seems like a big deal.
Mm-hmm. And the first two are going to be on, like, they're going to piggyback on another launch for HeightSat, the past satellite, so it's a Earth observation satellite, and they're going to piggyback on that launch. It's going to be a secondary payload, and they're going to test those satellites with ground stations. So that's where Tesla comes into play. There are 9 ground stations, and 5 of which are at SpaceX, just facilities all around the world. So SpaceX has, of course, is headquarters in Hawthorne in Los Angeles, but they also have a test center in Texas, and a space launch, a commercial space spaceports in Texas also. But the only other ground station that is not directly owned by SpaceX is going to be at Tesla's Fremont factory. You can make what you want of that, but of course the big speculation is that Tesla's going to be somehow involved in the plans. Like as a customer, probably, like as a customer of the internet service. We don't know if that's actually in the plans, but that's the big speculation right now.
Of course, of course, every mm-hmm. Tesla is going to have internet all over. They're paying AT&T currently, or you know, in the U.S. and I think Rogers in Canada and everybody else for internet. Why wouldn't they just have SpaceX internet as part of their you know, navigation as well, plans.
I don't know that. I'm not like well versed in that stuff, so I don't know if it's like technology feasible to have an internet satellite internet connection that's viable, because Tesla's internet connection is very important in the cars, especially with those with autopilot. Like they need information very often, and we know that 4G is quite reliable right now. So it would have to be a very secured internet connection that doesn't drop monotonely or anything like that.
I mean, theoretically, it would be safer or more reliable, because it's everywhere. You could be in the North Pole, you could be in the Sahara Desert, anywhere on Earth.
Yeah, the coverage would be wider. Yeah. Well, that's true, but that's true once like the full constellation is up there.
Right. So, no. I mean, I wouldn't imagine that Tesla cars are going to use it day one, although, yeah, you know, maybe for testing. I don't know.
So that's the presumption right now based on Tesla having a ground station in Fremont. I'm not sure though how it helps with testing. What SpaceX is working on too is that's just like the test phase. They're gonna have a few satellites in space. They're gonna have a few ground station, but they're actually working on a user device to receive the signal. So that's gonna be a device like people have at their homes right now and in region where I don't think we're like satellite internet right now is really popular outside of like deep in the country or something.
It's because it's crazy slow
versus
the Iridium satellite. It's like ISDN speed, which is like, you know, barely faster than those old telephone modems.
Yeah, so that's what
they're good for phone calls, but
yeah, and that's what SpaceX is selling right now, is the fact that it's going to be comparable to cable. That's my understanding. Like, it's going to
right.
be same ping time, same capacity for.
I don't know how they're going to do the ping time, because like just speed of light, I guess, is. And low latency electronics inside, I guess. I don't know.
Well, the like I said, it's not my wheelhouse at all. But when I read into it, I think like the advantage is that the signal will travel faster in space, in the vacuum of space. So the signal between satellites is going to be faster.
I don't think that's true. I think radio signals don't slow down in atmosphere. Sound does.
No, but it's just like the way the way data travels in a cable, in a fiber cable, is apparently like I don't know the actual, like, is it millisecond, is it nanosecond, whatever, slower than it travels in space. That was the argument when they were presenting the.
I always thought it was like the electronics, like on the ends, like, you know, speed of light is constant, but. When it's going through a router, it's got to be turned into electronic signals, and those have to be processed.
Probably a bunch of people, you know, right now that are listening. Yeah. They don't know what they're talking about, and you're probably right.
we don't on a very high level. We have some understanding, but yeah.
There's no actually. We should probably look at the comments here. Yet there's no 95 arrow space yet.
Not yet.
No, we're focused.
Although
on the
there's been there's been requests. so let's get, actually that's a good thing to go to the comments right now. We've got Matt Obadia, who's a great viewer. He's always asking questions. Any update on CHAdeMO working for Model 3?
Yeah.
I don't think we've had one. Theoretically, it should. I think it's just the handshake that's the issue.
Yeah, I think that was just it's not a hardware issue. It's just a software issue, and it's probably not high priority right now for Tesla. But I know that Tesla is working on adapters more seriously because there's a lot of demand, especially in Europe right now.
Yeah, I'd like to see a CCS adapter, or even better, like a CCS / CHAdeMO adapter / whatever is going on in China. That would be nice if you could just have everything.
You know what Tesla did in China, though.
Yeah, they just put a big hole in the side of the car and
put a dual connector charge port instead. That was surprising when Tesla did that.
Well, you know what's kind of interesting is if you look at the input port on the Model 3, like there's plenty of room there for some other ports.
So, yeah, it's not a problem. Like it's a problem the way Tesla did it for the Model S in China, because you can see it, like the Model S is the charge port is so well hidden within the backlight, but now they just included a new charge port that you see within the body frame, which isn't as aesthetically pleasing as the original solution for the Model S.
Yeah, certainly not.
But
so they thought ahead on the Model 3.
Yeah, so a Model 3 could make easier sense. And if it's in there, if it's already in the same charge port, like you could put five different connectors there and no one would care, as long as you just not every time you want to plug, that's not the right plug, that's not the right hole in every. And then,
you know what I don't understand, like no car has ever done this, but why don't they just have like a plug on a, you know, like an extension cord that on a kind of like a reel where you just pull it out and plug it in, like when you're going to grandma's house or whatever, you don't have to deal with like, you know, the typical charge port. You just like pull out a cable.
I've seen the other way around. I've seen like that cable thing on the side of the charger, of the connector itself, and then you plug it into a car, but you mean having that mechanism inside the car and you just pull it?
Yeah, it's right in there.
Probably takes a lot of space and
yeah, there's probably some sort of electrical engineering problem that I'm not thinking of, where if it overheats or something, then there's got to be some
So if the cable is longer and then it's wrapped up, that's not ideal. And it's just also a space thing. I think just take a lot of space.
All right, some more questions. Is Buffalo Gigafactory 2 getting solar?
No, it won't. It's just there's hydro. They're in Niagara Falls. I think they were getting hydro. I get that question all the time in Quebec. All the time people are asking me, hey, how do I get solar in Quebec? You don't want to get solar in Quebec. Like, I know Hydro-Québec is increasing the rates right now and people are freaking out and everything. But it's bugging me too. I pay the same rate as you guys. It's bugging me. But it's still just a fraction of just what Seth is paying, like 200 miles from us. In a first world country too, so we can complain that they are increasing their price because they are a state owned company and everything. So we can complain all we want, but at the end of the day, we don't have another option because it's still not because they are they have a monopoly, which they do, but because there's no cheaper option right now. So as long as
in Vermont, we just got an update. We're on a time of use, and if on the peak rates, it's over 20 cents per kilowatt hour. Yeah. And the off peak is 11 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, so right now, I think it's going up like some to 9 cents Canadian.
Canadian.
So it's like 7 cents US. So it's less than it's almost a fourth of the price that you're paying. So it's really not expensive right now. But of course, it's the only thing we know. So every time that it increases, it pisses people off and it's okay. But as long as the solar doesn't become like cheaper, and it will, but it doesn't make sense for us right now, and it doesn't make sense for other places that have like just cheap hydroelectricity, and that includes Buffalo, and I think that was actually one of the reasons why it wasn't Tesla, but back then the project was under SolarCity and the startup that they bought, which I'm forgetting the name of right now, but that was a reason why they went there. It makes sense. Any other question, or we go back to?
Yeah, I'm looking through. They're mostly just talking to each other. That's cool.
Yeah, talking to each other all you want.
Complaining about taxes.
So we can move to the Roadster. So if you go to Electric right now and you search for the Roadster, the first article is gonna pick up. It's gonna be Tesla bringing the Roadster to the HQ in Palo Alto, and that pretty much gave us one of the best look at the Roadster since the unveiling. We got a bunch of pictures from our friend Casey Spencer. If you remember, Casey is the same guy that brought us some of the hypermiling world record for the Model S a few years back, and also the mind control Model S.
And I guess he got hired at Tesla for that, right?
Yeah. So apparently we didn't know, but he worked at Tesla right now, and Tesla brought the Roadster at the HQ for employees to see it, because right after the unveiling back in November, when we were there, Seth and I, it was a big event, and there was a bunch of Tesla employees there too, but it was mainly for to talk to the owners and the media and stuff. But the next day there was an employee day, so the employees were able to see the car too and see the semi too, but that's still just only a fraction of Tesla employees seeing the car. So you have a new car that your company makes, but vast majority of employees never seen in person. So now they brought it to the HQ, which is interesting, and you get to see the car and see the special features like the steering wheel that and the main screen, which also is interesting for a lot of people. Like the way the screen is incorporated into the dash and into the center console, which is really cool. What you don't see still is
the steering wheel is directly from Knight Rider. Like, it's the exact same steering wheel.
Yeah, pretty much.
Except it doesn't have the guns.
the thing that you don't see it too, because there was a rope all around the car, you couldn't get too close, is the back seat. Everyone's gonna want to know about the back seat, but we never had a great look at it.
No, I know. I'm really curious.
Yeah, because even when Tesla gave test drive and said you got a test drive and everything, it was dark, and you get a few seconds in the car and you couldn't see much. But there's apparently a decent size back seat, which is surprising a lot of people, including myself.
When you say decent, does that mean an adult can fit in there?
That's
what, or is it
Elon was saying. Like, the only information we have about it was what Elon was saying at the unveiling, and he claimed that two adults could fit that there, but a lot of people are skeptical.
Like two adults in an emergency, or like normally?
Well, I think the main thing he said was like a family could go on a trip and like you fit two kids back there,
right?
Two adults on the front, and you can still have some place for some room for luggage. Moving on, yeah, that's always bothering me. Tesla's fight for direct sales in the U.S. So every month or so, I write a few articles about that stuff because I think it's important since it's slowing down the rollout of electric vehicles in the U.S. in a major way in some places. With the legislative sessions with the new year's coming, like a few legislative sessions, depending where states are starting. So Tesla is like doing a new push for direct sales simultaneously in a few different states at the same time. So I wrote sort of a summary of each state because in the last few weeks, bills were introduced in New York. Of course, Tesla can sell cars in New York right now, but they are limited to 5 stores because the it wasn't legal for them to sell car directly with company-owned dealerships. But they struck a deal with the state and they allowed them to have 5 locations, but they have now completely outgrown those 5 locations and they need more. So they are pushing for new deals, not to outright allow direct sales, which would be the common sense thing to do, in my opinion. But instead, they will increase the compromise to 20 stores, which I think is not bad for Tesla in New York.
Yeah, I mean, 20 stores is quite a few. I think, you know, some neighboring states like Connecticut, they really want to get stores in. And I know my store, which is Mount Kisco, gets tons of people from Connecticut because they got all the, you know, the stockbrokers who are doing the low tax thing in Connecticut. Like they could put one right on the Connecticut border if, you know, Connecticut never comes around, and that would be quite good. I'm sure they would love to have one like in Rye.
They need to put 5 then, upstate too. That's part of the deal. Out of the 15 new store, 5 needs to be upstate.
Right. I mean, you know, Buffalo, Schenectady. What else is up there?
Albany, is it considered upstate now? Albany.
Yeah, Albany. Albany's the capital. Yeah. Rochester.
Yeah, Rochester's supposed to have one too. So yeah, that's coming. And Connecticut, a bill wasn't introduced yet, but it's expected to in the current legislation. So a new bill in Connecticut is going to be pushed too. But Tesla just had a hard time in Connecticut, like 4 years in a row that, first 3 years didn't work. Now it's going to be the 4th year that they're going to try to push the legislation. And the problem too is that, like in Texas, for example, Tesla have the same issue. They cannot sell cars directly, but they can still deliver them. Like the actual purchase process goes through a Tesla store in another state, but you can still get delivery like at your house or at work or whatever. You can't do that in Connecticut, so that's why like Mount Kisco, like you said, is seeing a lot of traffic from them because they actually have to go to another state to take delivery and then bring the car in the state and register it there.
Which we can say, like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy. It's crazy that that they have to do this. This is an American car company selling clean vehicles. It like to me, it blows my mind.
There's no argument for it at all. Like there's no argument that makes sense. The only reason why it's the case is because the dealership have a monopoly on car sales and they want to keep that monopoly, and they have enough influence at the legislative level to keep that monopoly. That's the only reason. So it's not nefarious, it's not illegal, it's all legal, but it's an influence on the political process that is very successful.
I mean, if our federal government wasn't such a circus, I would be like all over this. But like, I've got so much energy, like just losing my mind every day.
That's the thing. The federal government already waded in on that. Like the FTC, I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago, weighing in on the issue. Tesla, that they had hearings and everything. Tesla presented at their hearings. The Dealership Association presented at their hearings. A few other automakers did, like GM and everything. And they heard everybody's side of the issue, and they made it clear, like, that doesn't make sense. It should be allowed to, Tesla should be allowed to compete. They don't have a franchise dealership, so the competition is completely fair. But that's the thing, the FTC said they don't have a power on per state to implement any law at that level, so it's staying a per state issue. And speaking of per state issue, other legislation that's going on right now for direct sell are in Utah. Tesla's getting another push in Utah with a new bill introduced just this week. New Mexico 2 weeks ago, but some readers just informed me that the legislative session in New Mexico is like crazy short, and the bill was introduced like last minute, and 2 days later it was dropped because there was no time to walk it through the entire process to get a vote on. So that was just like Tesla testing the waters with the bill, and it's gonna have to go next year. So if you're a Model 3 reservation holder in New Mexico, don't expect to have an easy way to get your car this year. Well, you can still probably get it, but like it's gonna be like the same issue that you have in Connecticut and or Texas and those places. Oklahoma got a new bill this month. Wisconsin last month got a new bill, and that's pretty much it. Might be a few others too that Tesla is currently pushing, but I'm not aware of all the efforts separately. There's Michigan too, that's always an issue, but Tesla just gave up on the on going through the political process, and instead is in court right
judicial.
Now. Judicial process instead. You're suing the state. There's no update on that yet. It's going to be a long, long, long process, so we don't expect any news on that anytime. But there's going to be a ton of news that's going to come out of the actual lawsuit in court, but the decision is not going to come out, I think, for a while, and neither side seem to be ready to settle on it. So of course, if you're asking yourself what you can do about it, there isn't much other than talk to your local legislator, local representative, and let him know what you think about the situation in a polite way, of course, even if you find it that it's very stupid.
Repulsive.
Yeah. And show up to the hearing. So normally there's a hearing about the bill being presented. And of course, you know that dealerships are going to show up to the hearing. So it's always nice to have a counterpart to it with the counter-argument. But is that enough Tesla news for the week? We always like 50 minutes into the podcast, and I've only talked about Tesla basically. But they generate more news in the EV world, that's for sure. So there's not much way around it. The only other thing that wasn't Tesla related that I wanted to talk about in the podcast was Porsche, because what we've seen from Porsche over the last month or so is that they've been pushing a lot of PR stuff. So they've been sending us a lot of PR press release, press media content and stuff like that about electric vehicles. So it looks like they're really like they want to stay in the news when it comes to EVs, because they're launching, of course, the Mission E next year, and they seem to be really want to sell electric powertrains to their motorhead fans, because of course Porsche is really like it's really big in the gearhead world. And this week they released like a long blog post about just how great electric vehicles are. Basically, it was a love letter to electric vehicles, basically, and with a few side notes of course. And but the takeaway, I think, from and you can read it on we have a link on Electrek. If you search Porsche right now, it's gonna be the first thing that's gonna come up. And they're really trying to sell you the performance of advantage of an electric powertrain. Of course, the quick acceleration, but also they're trying to minimize any kind of difficulty someone will have with charging, for example, because that's always the big thing when someone is switching from gas to electric vehicles. Oh, I'm gonna charge. Is it gonna be difficult to charge and everything? They're trying to make that as easy as possible. Of course, Porsche's is selling its own residential chargers, but they're also investing heavily into public fast charging station with the IONITY and charging network in Europe. Indirectly Electrify America in the US. But like I said, I'm fairly optimistic about Porsche's electric vehicle push for a few reasons, but just their own forecast that they were making, like the 50% production of electric vehicle within 6 years by 2022, that's big in my opinion, because like no other automakers, established automaker, like legacy automaker, is aiming for that high of a production. They are all talking about 25% and such. I think 50% is still too low by that point, but it's still ahead of any other automaker. So they are more aggressive than any other maker, I think. And yeah, and the Mission E looks just insanely cool. So I think they're pretty serious about it. But I thought it was interesting to know just how much PR stuff they're sending out about EV right now. I don't know what you think about it.
Yeah, you know, I'm excited. I'm more excited about the charging technology because, you know, they have these very high expectations, and Tesla's been kind of stuck at 120 kilowatts for a while. So, you know, I'm ready for the space race of charging speed to happen.
Do you think Tesla's going to come out with something just to beat them by?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of just like, you know, having just done this Ohio trip, stopping at, you know, obviously when I'm driving fast, you know, a little bit over the speed limit, mileage goes down. When it's negative, you know, it's like 10 degrees or in the single digits, range goes down. So I was stopping at pretty much every supercharger along the way. And obviously being a little quicker would be nice. But you know, I don't know if the 18650 battery technology is the limiting factor, or what's the limiting factor, because even at the 120 kilowatt stations and with a 90 kilowatt hour battery, you only get the full 120 kilowatts for a few minutes, and then it starts to slowly trickle down. And by the time you're at 50%, you're usually under 100 kilowatts, and then you know by the time you're at 60-70%, you're already at 50 kilowatts, which is what Chatamo and CCS stations typically offer. So
yeah,
you only get that fast charge when you're pretty much, you know, when you're pretty low on charge.
That's why sometimes you're better off just not charging at 100% and just stopping by the next one and still be like limiting at 50% or something. And if you know you're doing long distance, it would make sense to plan for that.
We should do a post on like, you know, long distance charging technology. Basically, you want to roll into the charging station empty,
as low as possible,
and then you want to charge, as low as possible, and then you want to charge enough to get to the next charging station, or you know, the as far as you can go.
If you're doing that with the Bolt, though, you gotta be careful. You know what I learned this week?
No,
it was interesting. Is that if you pull in with zero charge, or like the battery pack is depleted, you cannot charge at a fast charging station. The only thing that's gonna
That's that Facebook post, right?
No, it wasn't on Facebook, but maybe it was. No,
I shared something in the Slack channel about a guy on Facebook who was specifically testing this. It was cold, and he pulled in and he had to charge at a level 2 because he wasn't able to charge at the CCS station he was at.
Yeah,
and basically he had to reach like the cable from a separate charger. He had to reach over, charge it like to, you know, 5% or something.
Yeah, and what I heard is that's not the bug. That's a feature. That's how it works.
I don't know if it's a feature.
Well, it's not a feature, but it's how it works. It's like it's not a bug. GM doesn't plan to change it or anything.
No.
So if you're planning a trip, normally you don't arrive at 0%. It's pretty much impossible. But sometimes, I mean, if you park at a charger and you're not charging, and then you end up at 0% and you were just planning on plugging in, then you have an issue with it. But yeah, I don't think that's gonna be a big problem.
I think it would be a problem if you like you ran out of juice and you got a flatbed and they took you to a charging station.
Yeah,
and that you're like,
that's a more plausible scenario.
Right.
Cedric says, didn't Elon comment about a coming charging speed with the suggestion as a child's toy? Yeah, that was a while ago, though.
I feel like that was in relation to the mega chargers on the truck.
No, that was back when I tweeted right. about increasing charge rate, and he tweeted back about supercharger V3. And then I asked him, hey, well, what's that supercharger V3? That's the first time we asked about it. And then he said, oh, it's coming up. It's coming up soon. And then I asked about the charge rate. I referred to the ultra fast that people are talking about, which is 350 kilowatts.
350, right?
350. Yeah, that's what Porsche is referring is calling the ultra fast. And he referred to that as a child's toy. So meaning that he's gonna be faster. Then the mega charger came up for the Tesla Semi, which is clearly over 350 kilowatt, which would make sense with that comment. But he wasn't.
I think
talking
it's close
about,
to a megawatt, right?
Yeah, it has to be over a megawatt according to our calculation. But supercharger V3 implies that it's just an iteration of the supercharger, and it's going to be used by the vehicles and Tesla Semi. I don't even think if Tesla Semi was announced back then. It didn't make sense. I think it was clear that we were talking about the charge rate for the cars. That's what we want right now. It's not that Tesla Semi is not cool or anything, but we want a higher charge rate for the cars.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is to get it down to gasoline time, and the transfer of energy of gasoline going into your car, which five minutes would probably be a nice fill-up time.
Though, to be fair, like 350 kilowatts, if Porsche can really do that, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's game over. At that point, it's already game over for gas, I think. So right. People can just work around the fact that it's 15 minutes instead of 5 minutes. Like it's because that's a big, I think, technological improvement. If you go from 15 to 5 minutes, like it's a big leap to do. I think 15 minutes is already okay for most people.
I agree. But I think it's going to be kind of a letdown to know that you get 350 kilowatts at the beginning, but by the time you're a quarter full, it's already down to 100.
Yeah.
And people are going to be like, well, that's not as good. Yeah. So we'll see what the bottom line is.
But then you get like the new Roadster with a 200 kilowatt hour battery pack. And even at 350, it's like, yeah, it's like 45 minutes to charge if you can maintain that charge rate all the way through. But with a car like that, you don't even keep it 100%. Like you never keep it 100%. You keep it like at 50% all the time, basically.
Yeah, I would like to do like a cannonball run with that thing. That'd be kind of fun. Yeah,
like three charges. Can you do three and a half?
I mean, that's if you kind of hang out at the speed limit, which I imagine would be almost impossible to do with that car.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So, anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much. Well, a few questions. Do we have a few more questions for the comments? What if each model of the Model 3 can take 120 kilowatts? Matt has.
Each module, each battery module.
Yeah, but there are three modules.
I think they're already splitting the modules up there. So I don't know if that's. I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, because we know that it's likely for the mega charger and the Tesla Semi that it's gonna be split per, like it's gonna be different connections, but that's on the connector side too. It's not just on the battery module sides.
Right.
We're gonna definitely look into that though. There's really a lot of things that we don't understand for sure yet about Tesla's new battery technology for the next generation with the Roadster and the Tesla Semi and the mega charger that comes with it. Because they never confirmed.
Maybe we should go to the Gigafactory.
Yeah, we're trying to go to the Gigafactory soon and maybe try to find a few more information for you guys and report back. We're going to race also the Tesla Semi. When are we going to do that?
That'll be fun.
Yeah, we're supposed to do that sometime soon. But thanks a lot for joining us, guys. And thanks to our Patreon supporters for making it possible. We have now over 200 Patreon supporters, and we appreciate each and every one of you guys. You make this possible, not only the podcast, but you help out also for the website and our articles that we publish every week. If you feel like contributing, please do. And we'll be back next week as usual. Have a good one.